Okay, the civil service interview is with David Keiling, Executive Director of the Governance Commission and Senior Executive Project Manager for the Public Service Reform Program in Liberia. Interviewer is Summer Lopez. Dr. Keiling, thank you very much for agreeing to speak with us and taking this time.
Thank you very much and welcome to the Governance Commission.
Thank you. I'd like to begin this conversation by asking you to just describe your role in public sector reform in Liberia.
My role is to serve as a change agent, is to provide the technical and administrative support to the chair of the commission as it relates to what the work that needs to be done in the public sector. As you are aware, or you may be aware, our government, our country has gone through a serious period of crisis. And those of us that have been interested in our history and our governance system know that it didn't just begin in 1990. And from what we understand, it started from the inception of this country, where settlers came and ex-slaves returned to Africa and founded what is known as Liberia, the land of liberty. And quite honestly, within 150-year period, the governance system has not functioned well because the settlers who ran away from lack of freedom and who have been denied opportunities to proper governance, they themselves engaged in practices not wholesome in terms of creating statehood. So Liberia, in my opinion, does not measure up to what is really a state, in the sense that Monrovia, which is the capital city, is where all of the economic activity, the political decisions, and all of the important things in terms of our arrangement, our governance arrangement, is still being concentrated. And initially, it was by design that a central governance system will be organized to make sure that the rest of the country operates and does things in compliance with, not in any confrontation or let's say not opposing the central government authority, which is understandable from the fact that the settlers felt insecure initially and there had been series of war, and the last 13-year war was just the culmination of the great divide between the settlers and the aborigines, or the indigenous people, generally in Liberia, called them the Americo-Liberians, or the settlers and the country people. So mine being here is really a mission for me. When the war drove us out of here, I decided to pursue further education. And I did a master's in human resource development, doctorate in human resource development. And my dissertation was on why is it that in Liberia or in Africa in general, we don't climb up, we don't pursue the professional career area. By that I mean that when we return to Liberia, most Liberians tend to want to be administrators, to be executives, rather than pursuing the career path where they can leave some legacy or some output or some enduring impact on society. And I observed in my own career a heavy reliance on external assistance. And to some extent, it's still happening. We talk about Liberianization. How do we prepare Liberia to effectively take, to participate in their own economic affairs and so forth? So culturally, we tended to drift towards administrative positions rather than pursuing science or scientific, not only managerial, all of the other career areas. Generally, that's generally the situation. So my dissertation was on obstacles inhibiting managerial performance among Liberian professionals. So I realized that there were a number of reasons, one being cultural factors, one being environmental factors, that in a lot of cases, some people were provided the opportunity. Certain sections of our country were for some reason destined to be leaders or made to be leaders at the expense of others. So career and valuing Liberian entrepreneurship had not been the practice. I mean, our society hasn't valued or meaning our governmental system. So that has been a problem. I thought that I needed to make some contribution. And when I came back, I was recruited to join the government. It was then the Government Reform Commission. And I had the opportunity to work, to begin some work, working with international colleagues on the public sector. This is how I started that. So I've been here from day one dealing with the public sector reform initiative by the then interim government and then the current government.
And can you talk a little bit about the role that the Governance Commission itself plays in the public sector reform?
Okay. The Governance Commission was established on October 9th, 2007. Before then, it operated under executive order as a governance reform commission. But because of the complexities and the intricacies of reforming an entire governance system, it was felt that after reform, we still need to deal with governance issues. So at the time the institution was being legislated, it was decided that we needed a permanent commission to address public sector reform, which deals with generally the ministries and agencies, how they are organized and how they should be functioning. Decentralization, like I mentioned earlier, this government is still highly centralized. It operates within a scheme of command and control. And there's an overwhelming outcry among most Liberians, especially in the rural area, that the governance system needs to be decentralized. And also, along with public sector reform, the way our governance system is such that the acts creating each agency of government, you have to go through a legislative process. So changes that are made that require legal amendments are then processed through the system. So in essence, within the Governance Commission, we have four or five mandate areas: legal and judicial reform, public sector reform, developing a national integrity system, and visioning, dealing with the symbols and those things that are intangibles but are very important in building a government of cohesion and a purpose where there's clear vision as a society. We're dealing with that, and also we will have the responsibility to monitor and evaluate the performance of ministries and agencies to some extent, or I would say including the legislative and the judiciary. Currently, we are in phase one of the public sector or public service reform, focusing mainly on the functions, streamlining the functions, and identifying over areas of duplications and overlapping of functions, and defining the state, what are the core functions of government, and making sure that we align and rationalize them in a way that work for Liberia.
I'd like to begin with some general questions about civil service reform, and then we'll move on to some specific types of changes. Would you talk a little bit about capacity in the public sector in Liberia, both when you started and what has changed since then?
Okay, I worked as a national consultant with an international consultant funded by the British government under a DFID as the Department of Foreign International Development or so. And as a research person and in doing a situation assessment of all the ministries and agencies, as we walked in, it was very, very depressing.
When was this?
This was in 2005. So it's done between 2005 and 2006. Okay. Particularly 2005, the ministries, most of the ministries and agencies did not have basic office equipment. They didn't have personnel. It was very, very depressing. And as someone who has worked for about 15 years in government and served in some leadership position, I was at pains visiting ministries that were functioning and performing. I worked for the Ministry of Planning for about 10 years as a manpower economist, and we were doing things. We were on course. If we had remained on course, we would have been by far better off than most African countries. But now we have to go back and begin to learn from our colleagues. So in terms of capacity, overall, first, we had a manpower shortage situation before the coup took place, and we were trying to develop our human resource capacity, and that's one of my areas of interest, human resource development. And we're grappling with how do we catch up with making sure that we produce enough Liberians to man our economy and industry. The war came and dissipated everything, and most of our best trained medical doctors and administrators left the country. So we are virtually still in a situation where others are doing very important things that we should be doing for ourselves. So from that particular point until now, I feel very gratified when I walk into most of the ministries. Furnitures are there, computer, and the what public administrators call the health factor, the hygiene factors, are being attended to. You know, there's a working environment. A condition is created for you to perform, all right? And the resources, we still have most of that because, for instance, as a governance commission, this commission, as I mentioned, was established on October 9, 2007. Up to now, besides the commissioners, I am the only professional person who has stayed on. Because I have a governance mission, I think this is very, very important. If we don't do what we are doing, what the governance commission is doing, addressing these areas that I mentioned regarding amended areas, if we don't deal with constitutional issues, if we don't deal with the vision issues, if we don't deal with the value system issue, if we don't create a productive work environment, work culture, integrity, it wouldn't deal with them and institute system that would address when people misbehave. We during my time here, we've been able to prepare a number of drafts. One of them had to do with the civil service rules and procedures. And we also developed code of conduct for public servants. In many African countries, you have them in two categories, one for officials and one for the regular civil servants. But for our purpose, we combine both the code of conduct for public servants, and is currently before the legislature. Then we worked on an act to establish an anti-corruption commission. And I'm gratified and pleased when I heard from the president last night that she signed the anti-corruption act. That gives me great joy that people, government officials, and people in our society will not loot the public coffers and walk away with it. We want to produce another, I don't want to mention the name, some of our people are now incarcerated and have been investigated because of these awful practices that have been allowed to go on for a long time. So first thing, the code of conduct is still being debated at the legislature. And then, of course, the establishment of the commission itself. At some point, there was serious resistance that it wasn't, for some people, they thought we were doing civil service job or the Institute of Public Administration job. No, The focus of this is systemic, is dealing with systemic governance issues and challenges. So in terms of where we are, what we've done, I'm really, really delighted. And I've had to play a role in a number of legislation that have been formulated. It had to do with the Law Reform Commission, the Land Commission, and then establishing a tax force that will eventually do all of the work that have to do with the constitutional reform. Because decentralization and some of the issues related to the co-functioning, co-functions of governance, to have a lean and efficient governmental system that create a very wholesome environment for the private sector. Those are very important things, and I have been privileged to be a part of it and to make some contribution. It's been personally challenging, but it's been rewarding to a large extent.
And could you say a little bit about what you think are the current primary goals and objectives of the reform effort?
Well, as you know, we just published the poverty reduction strategy, and in there, you may have been told by others that there are four pillars. There are security sector, economic revitalization, and governance and rule of law, under which we worked. There is a chapter, I think 10 or 13, that has to do with that deals with governance and rule of law. And then infrastructures and social services. The current objective is first to make this place secure, the security sector. And initially, it was felt that defense, we have two ministries, national security and defense ministries, were excluded from our exercise, but last year it was then included. So security, reforming the security sector now has become part of, after the passage of this act, the president asked that we take the lead in working with those people who had responsibility for security sector, so that all of those functions that are, of course, civilian in nature, the role that civilians have to play in securing the country and also the communities and so forth, that we deal with those. Policing, you know, currently the Ministry of Justice has some of the functions dealing with supervising and making sure that the police functions very well. It has its own challenges and so forth. Right now, because of what needs to be done and the challenges of security, it's been really, really challenging for the Ministry of Justice to really focus on providing legal services to address those legal and judicial reform issues that need to be addressed in parallel to the reform efforts that we are undertaking. So it's been challenging, but we're making headway. I don't know what I addressed fully, but if I didn't repeat the question, I can add a little more on that.
Sure, no, that's good. But to be a little bit more specific about civil service reform, what would you say are some of the top goals?
Okay. With civil service, first thing, I was working on revising our work program for this year from July 1 to June 30, 2009. I can't speak for civil service itself because it's not our land. I mean, we don't have direct responsibility for that, but we have responsibility for the public sector, to reform the public sector. And of course, the civil service is part of that. They've come up, because of the challenges, as I mentioned, it took some time to get the commission off. And the commission is currently working on developing a public sector reform policy. Okay. In fact, we'll get a draft to the president by the 29th of this month. a public sector reform policy and strategic framework. Okay. That document will be setting the parameter, what it is we're trying to accomplish with our public service. What should the ministries and agencies be involved in? What are the core functions of government? What kind of arrangement, holistic arrangement can we establish between the public sector and the private sector? And then once that is clear, then we move into looking at the functions. First, let me back up. Look at we worked with the ministries and agencies, and we've come up with the mandates, the mission, the functions, and the organizational structure. The reason is that we had to take a look at the mission, first the mission, then the mandate of the respective ministries and agencies. And there are overlapping of functions, and we are in the process of rationalizing our governance system, the role of the state, and rationalizing what the Ministry of Planning should be doing. We have some proposals relative to the merger of certain ministries and strengthening the functions and providing more support to some of the ministries that have some key roles, but resources and logistics and human resources are not adequate. So rationalizing the roles of the ministries and agencies, and then once those mandates, functions, and organizational structure, let me say one or two things about the organizational structure. The way our current government is organized, some of the acts creating the ministries tell them precisely how they should be organized. And some of them are left at the discretion of the minister to determine how best it can be organized. So there is, it's not a harmonized system. There are variation in the nomenclature and the organizational arrangement. So part of our goal is to harmonize the system so that if you are a deputy minister, it's clear what your role is. Especially as it relates to the civil service, we are working to make sure that we set up a ministry within which there is a clear line between political appointees and the civil servants. And the civil servants, we are working to put in place a civil service system that will attract and retain professionals who in some cases will be even pay more than ministers, so that they can be attracted and retained, and that the mandates and functions and the mission of the respective ministries and agencies are pursued efficiently and effectively, and that impacts are evaluated, and that we engage in continuous improvement of performance of government ministries and agencies. And this would be one of our main function, to evaluate the performance of respective ministries. So as it relates to our role, we have the mandate to formulate policy recommendations as it relates to the functioning of the entire governance system. So we work very closely during this phase where we are focusing on the executive, that is the ministries and agencies, work closely with the civil service agency. When we begin the work, hopefully next year, even though the judiciary has commenced some reform, but as a neutral body, like we're doing with the ministries, the ministries themselves cannot reform themselves. They are not objective. They are concerned about turfs and all of those. So the same thing with the legislature, the same thing with the judiciary. So we are working with the executive that constitute 2/3 of the governance system currently in Liberia. And then from there, we work with the judiciary and then the legislature. We are doing some work, but in an ad hoc way and on request with the judiciary and the legislature to try to take care of those things that need to be improved immediately and to address public service delivery that are urgent, the programs that are urgent and need to be. So in terms of systemic reform in the judiciary. We have not begun yet. It will be done under the leadership of the Chief Justice, but we'll be providing some technical support for them. So with the civil service itself, we are focusing on the members' functions, making sure that what we call establishment posts, that once their functions are approved, we will then, and while they have been approved, we are then examining what it is they are doing right now, the number of persons they have in each department, in each division, in each section, what are they doing? What are their skill levels? Where the gaps exist in terms of their background and skill level and experience? What type of education and training opportunity they need to have? What skill and knowledge gaps they need to fill to be productive on the job? So this is where we are in terms of working with the ministries and the civil service agencies on that. Well, no, overall, we've had some teething problems as it relates to how should it be done. It's the view of the commission that Liberians, and it's acknowledged, Liberians should own the process and provide leadership. It's proclaimed, acknowledged, but in practice, it is not because of resource constraints. Resources have been mobilized from our international partners, and they come in with strings attached. Most of the interventions are led by external experts, and these experts come for a very short period of time. They don't have a deep appreciation. They don't see things from an ethnic perspective. All right, they come as outsiders who do come and perform it as a job. But in a civil service reform process or in a governance reform process, there are two major components. The technical aspect, you want to make it technically sound, adapt some of the best practices around the world. But you have to adapt it to your own situation, which means it has to go through the political process, all right? That phase of it requires negotiation, give and take, compromises, and so forth. That aspect of it, foreign experts cannot play any significant role because we have to deal with the legislature, the ministers, and try to keep the course on a steady path with a clear-cut national perspective. The GC is perhaps one of the few commissions that has the overall systemic perspective towards governance. Others look at it from turf, planning perspective, agriculture perspective, but we look at it, planning for what? What should be the role of the Ministry of Agriculture? Should they be should they be involved in formulating policy and coordinating the activities and working and ensuring that conditions, the necessary conditions are created so that the private sector, those that are the farmers, have the right conditions under which to work. They have the types of support that they need in order for them to produce food at reasonable and affordable prices and available, that we have food security. So essentially, those are some of the challenges that we have to that we are grappling with.
And what are some of the ways that the commission has managed working with agencies who are trying to protect their turf?
Oh, we've as experienced administrators, and we are privileged to have one of our former president serving as chair of the commission. He comes with a lot of clout and is highly respected in the society. So when there are problems, we discuss. He's someone who listens, He's someone who has a very balanced perspective of issues and has a very national outlook towards things. So if I can just go back in terms of not much of a turf per se, but because of resource limitations, resource coming in, there has been a tendency for the international partners to say, we can do this, we can do that. And in between, you have vacuum in terms of what needs to be done from the from our perspective. So that in itself creates some problem. And then in terms of working with our Liberian colleagues, no, we don't have any serious problem. Eventually, once the policies are implemented or are formulated and approved, there will be some level of resistance, and we know that from the experience of other African countries. So we're trying to build in a mechanism that will reward those who are receptive to accepting changes and working hard to adapt and pursue the initiatives, the reform initiatives that have been approved and that have been put in place.
And do you have a sense of what that mechanism might look like?
We intend to provide awards, certificates, national recognition, and more resource support, you know, budgetary, national budgetary support. Those that are taking the lead and doing innovative programs and making impacts on the life of Liberian people, we intend to make case for them to get more support, and then they'll be what I might call path or torch bearers for others, so that they provide examples of success stories and so forth. So we are working on that. To what extent it will work, like I mentioned, we are committed to continuous improvement in the process, and where we may be going wrong, even we adapt what is considered best practices in other places and it's not working for us, we have to look at it and make sure that we try to understand why it is not working for us. Because we have our own Liberian idiosyncrasies. In any society you go, the culture is very, very important, and it needs to be taken into consideration when policies are enunciated, when new programs and innovation, and we're managing change. So GC is working to manage change, to help ministries and agencies to manage change, and to manage change is not easy.
Let me touch on a few specific areas of reform, and if you feel that you would like to skip to one of the next ones, we'll do that as well. So one of the questions is about reducing political and social influence in recruitment and promotion, and so I'm wondering if you can describe any changes that have occurred to recruitment and promotion procedures to reduce political influence and increase reliance on merit.
Okay, this is what I was referring to earlier. We have a draft here that we've been working on. Once the mandates are clear, the functions are delineated, and responsibility for the various ministries are clear, the civil service will have the authority to recruit people, and they will be recruited on the basis of merit. Okay, and it has commenced. Currently, the other ministries and agencies have been engaged in right-sizing or downsizing and making sure that those that are due for retirement are retired, and those that have been brought in due to the changes, the way it is in our system has been modeled after those of the United States, where new government leaders bring in aides. In the American system, as they bring in their aides and as they leave with those who they came of. But in our own case, as government leaders came in, as they left the people who they brought in. So we're trying to address those that really don't have the requisite skills for what they are doing, and then giving the opportunity to go to school, and make sure that and this is one thing I must commend. The government has been liberal to the extent that they allow college students to work full time and go to school, and that is helping to build capacity for the government. And as we bring in some interventions like the top 10, some specialized executive arrangement to bring in Liberians with talents from around the world. We have the senior executive service, and those are temporary interventions along with what the government is currently doing by sending people away for further studies. So changes are underway, and we're trying to put systems in place, and then that these systems will then be used, that there will be an objective basis on recruitment and competitive process of recruitment, and that the best people are selected and rewarded for what they do. So quality service is what the civil service or the public service is trying to achieve and move towards. The goal is, the end goal is to have an efficient, effective public service or civil service that treat people, the public, like they rendering service, quality service to the public, that they are there to serve rather than seeking their own interest. Okay, so those changes are underway, and they are being pursued vigorously by most of the ministers led by the president.
And what have been some of the challenges to these changes so far?
Again, the issue of capacity. Okay, people who like we're bringing in almost most of the places where the innovative interventions have been introduced, we bring in external experts, like I mentioned earlier. And if I can just go back, when we left college, when like before 1980, experts were brought in, and we had a counterpart relationship. I've had to work with a number of international experts, ranging from Indians, Americans, Germans, and you know, most around the world. And I learned, and I was mentored in the process. And we need to have this kind of long-term relationship where people learn on the job in very life situation. When you are in a situation where you have to deliver public goods and services, and the services are being demanded, they are urgent, you don't have the time or the luxury of sending people abroad for 2 years, 18 months, and then come, and then, you know. So the Liberians with a background and who have the subject capacity to acquire the knowledge and skills needed as they engage with international partners, it has been difficult because of the severe shortage of the manpower, the human resource that we have right now. And also the overall environment, the compensation for librarian professionals is low. So though we have some librarians who are capable, most of them work for NGOs and OMIO and the UN system. You go to meetings, few of us who take the leadership on the other side, 10 to 15 people in a meeting work for the UN, and few capable librarians are in the government system itself. So it's really, really challenging, you know, and to deliver without the human input in the whole process is a challenge. And also logistics, talk about GC. We have serious logistics problem. Okay. And we are trying to overcome that with the support of our international partners and also with our own government resource. Those are two major challenges, logistics and human resource, low level of human resource capacity. And then even with the few Liberians that are currently in the country, there's a challenge of motivation because of long years of war and hopelessness. Most of us have some degree, some element of psychosocial effect. The war has caused some changes in our mind, in our brain system, and which we learn, we say, we hear from this psychosocialist says that that some of those changes are permanent, and it's reflected in our attitude. You hear of conflicts both outside of the city, on land issues. People are very impatient. People get are oversensitive. They feel neglected for a long time, and the level of motivation and new skills that are needed, attitude and work culture, all of those were affected during these long years of civil strife.
And what are some of the ways that that the government or the GC or whomever has found to address some of these challenges? Or are there ways that you think these challenges could be addressed?
Well, they are being addressed. We're working with our international partners in our own government to under the peace building scheme program with UN assistance to deal with the psychosocial issues, and it has been partly addressed with the TRC hearings, where people, if you've been in the country for the last 2 weeks, I mean, some of the revelations, some of the issues that we will be dealing with as we formulate the national vision for this country have been addressed. Fundamental issues of justice and so forth. And then the issue of remuneration. Over the last 2 years, the government has steadily worked to increase working conditions and compensation for both ministers and civil servants. So that in itself is helping to contribute to that. And also the anti-corruption legislation, which I mentioned earlier, it has provisions there that we want to tackle corruption, I think, on three angles: prevention, education, and legislative action. So with education, we are going to deal with that by informing people about corruption. Most people in Liberia or around the world are corrupt to some extent, and that they are engaged in dishonest practices, but a degree, you know, in our own country is a little too high. So both the public and private sector people, the churches, the mosques, NGOs, international community, we are all involved to some degree. There's some evidence that we are all involved in some corruption. And how do we address that? Through education, making sure what the facts are, who's doing what, then what do we need to do about that? So the commission will have a whole division dealing with civic education and informing people and working with people to come up with measures to address it. And to begin with, as an example of some of the immediate innovative processes that have been introduced, is the adoption of the Extractive Industry Transparency International. And in our own case, because of the significant role of the forestry industry in the country, we added forestry as one of those components. And as I talked to you, the executive director of the LTI Secretariat is currently engaged in informing people. They've just completed, I mean today they are completing a two-day sensitization of the people who are in the diamond mining and gold mining area. And in my conversation with those who have participated, it's very overwhelming the extent to which the people have been left out of the natural resources that are taken out of their community, and they don't benefit at all. And this LTL, the Liberia Extractive Industry Transparency International work, is engaged in some innovative ways to address people as it relates to corruption, both at the private sector, big companies, and so forth, and getting the local people being aware and sensitive and being proactive in making sure that even their own leaders do not take government resources, county development fund, and converted in their own, you know, use, that a system of justice is being enhanced. It's there, but it's being enhanced and made sure to serve the interests of the Liberian people. So we have begun the process, and we still have a long way to go, but we've begun, and it's clear where we need to go as a government. Okay, yeah.
Can I just ask you a couple of final questions?
Okay.
So first of all, let me just ask you, you've touched on the donor relations. So let me just ask you that if you had the chance to write a handbook for people who were managing civil service reform or public sector reform in challenging environments, what are some of the topics that you would consider most important? And what would make a handbook like this useful to you?
For civil service?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Promoting proper work culture, work ethics. Somehow developing a training program that will teach people, or certain things you can teach, some programs that will enable them to realize that you need to be sure of what it is you are interested in. If you're going to work in public service, is it education that you have a calling for? And then make sure that the individuals in there are clear on their career goals. If their career goals match with the mandate or the mission of that institution, then that's good. If it is not, then it needs to be addressed, because the organization itself needs to be developed. You know, the institution, along with the people. If the people are clear and interested in their job, really, really interested in their job, then they get up in the morning, say, I look forward to going to work and doing something worthwhile. And at the end of the day, you complete a task, there's some degree of satisfaction. This is not currently the case in our country. People are what in human resource or compensation we say, they only after the, is that the intrinsic or the extrinsic? One that has to do with only the money. It's not a job. It's not what you're trying to accomplish. You are not driven by a mission or a personal goal that you want to accomplish. So I would like to, in that handbook, I like to make that clear, that work ethics and that the institution will create a work culture where team, where the right hygiene, like health fact, I mean, things like proper working condition, resources are provided, and that people who are managers do work planning. Okay. Work planning and make sure that by the end of the day, you're examining what it is we're able to do, and you indicate the next, what is required for the next day, those activities. We need those types of skills and practices being employed so that the quality of service can be improved. So first, the work culture and work ethics, and matching the organization mission with the career interests of those who are working in that institution, and then a commensurate compensation scheme where you have some benefits and security. Right now in Liberia, our pension scheme is not as good as we want it to be. As a result, people want to stay as long as they can working for government. There's no desire to want to retire, you know. So retirement scheme, pension schemes are issues that we need to address and build into our public service scheme.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, don't mention.